incident, including a police officer, and more than 700 have been arrested so far for crimes related to the breach.
Iranians have paid tribute to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, two anti-terror icons who were assassinated in a U.S. drone strike at the Baghdad airport on January 3, 2020. People from all walks of life participated in ceremonies across Iran to mark the occasion. They called for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Addressing a gathering in the capital, Tehran, President Ibrahim Raisi said former U.S. President Donald Trump, who ordered the strike, must be put on trial.
The then U.S. president must be put on trial as an aggressor, murderer, and the main criminal. He must face divine retribution. If Trump, Pompeo, and other criminals are not tried in a fair court for their horrible crime and are not punished for their shameful acts, I tell all American statesmen, do not doubt, Muslims will take revenge.
Similar ceremonies were held in other countries too. People in Iraq, Yemen, Palestine, and Syria held vigils and paid tribute to the top generals.
So he's seen as someone who put the country first, who did whatever was necessary, whatever he was called to do for his country, he did. He was described by many as an unassuming man. He wasn't arrogant. And that led to his personal appeal. But he's seen as a great hero in Iran and the surrounding area, and his record in defending the country and in leading the troops in different areas, different times, and even in peacetime, being responsible for at least some of the military in Iran, has left the people with great memories of him and great respect for him.
In Lebanon, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement said the expulsion of all U.S. troops from the region will be the ultimate revenge for the assassination of Soleimani and Muhandis. Said Hassan Nasrallah hailed the two figures, saying they played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists in the region. Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations has urged the UN Security Council to hold the United States and the Israeli regime responsible for the assassination of Iran's anti-terror commander, General Qasem Soleimani.
Given the dire implications of this terrorist act on international peace and security, the Security Council must live up to its charter-based responsibilities and hold the United States and the Israeli regime to account for planning, supporting, and committing the terrorist act. As I have on numerous occasions underlined, this internationally wrongful criminal act was a grave breach of the obligations of the United States under international law, and thus entails its international responsibilities.
Tahravanchi stressed that General Soleimani played a significant role in combating international terrorism, calling his assassination a big gift and service to Daesh and other terrorist groups in the region. The Iranian diplomat noted that former head of the Israeli military intelligence, Major General Tamir Haiman, admitted last December that Tel Aviv was involved in the 2020 assassination and described it as one of the two significant and important targeted killings during his term.
The United States, unfortunately, has veto power in the Security Council and continually defends Israel from accountability for its many crimes against humanity and international war crimes and gross violations of human rights. So the fact that Israel was involved in the assassination of General Soleimani, which was ordered and carried out by the United States, is something the Security Council will never hold Israel responsible for.
The former official was apparently referring to Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, an Iranian nuclear scientist who was assassinated north of the capital, Tehran, in November 2020. Despite Iran's repeated calls on the international community to hold the perpetrators responsible for the dangerous adventurisms, neither the United Nations nor self-proclaimed promoters of human rights in the West have so far called for accountability or made any meaningful attempt to prevent similar attacks. Regardless, Iran has vowed to bring the perpetrators to justice and take revenge for the crimes they've committed.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaikum, dear listeners. I would like to invite you to IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station.
Salaamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you all. Salaam Sayyid Jafar.
Alaikum salam. How are you, Hassanain?
I'm good. By the way, dear listeners, I'm Hassanain from India.
I'm Jafar Sayyid from Houston, Texas. Okay, so in Houston, at least, there are two groups of people here. When you ask them about Islam, there's two main views that are there.
Yeah.
One that's been shaped by the media over there, uh-huh. who are against Islam and show Islam as like a violent religion.
Okay, so wait, this point over here is to be highlighted. The one who gain their knowledge about Islam from the media have a bad perspective about Islam.
They have the perspective that the media wants them to have, right? They don't have their own, say, personal perspective towards religion. They take whatever the media gives them.
Exactly. Influenced by media.
And then the other ones are those who are actually interested in the religion. Mm-hmm. They know the media is giving them the wrong information.
Okay.
Right? They want to know what the real religion is about, right? There are two groups here. And I've seen both groups. I guess I'll start with the ones that are completely influenced by the media, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have events like 9/11. You have events, say, shootings or stabbings in school. You have, say, bomb threats at airports, right?
Yeah.
All of these, most of these claims are targeted towards Muslims.
What do you think? There have been certain factors in the history that has led to the bad image of Islam.
I wouldn't say there was something in history that really made them, like, hate Islam. In a sense,
I'm not talking about, like, thousands of years ago. I'm talking about, like, recent history. Like, you mentioned 9/11.
Yeah.
Like, these kind of factors. Do you think that they have helped the media, you know, who are actually trying to defame Islam, these factors have helped them? They have used these things as weapon to defame Islam more and more.
Yeah, obviously, I agree with you where they've used this as a weapon. They've really preyed on the fear of people and made them believe what they want them to believe.
Yeah.
Right? In a sense, they've manipulated them to such an extent where they will believe anything they say now, right? Whether it's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, they mix them up a little bit. They're telling the truth, and they have a couple lies mixed in.
Okay.
They can't tell in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So as of now, we're having two different sources. Like, one's the media, and the other one's, like, you know, people, you know, trying to gain self-knowledge. What do they gain that from?
Okay, so most of that is from, because of the, I guess, back in the day, there weren't as many scholars in the West as there are now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing that there are a lot more scholars going back to countries like, say, Canada or the U.S. or even going to, like, Europe and letting them know about Islam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Opening their eyes to the concept of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, because there weren't that many scholars going back and letting the people know about Islam, a lot of these guys would get their information from books, right? They would go to libraries, you know, before the internet and all that, right? Before everyone would get everything from a phone in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
They would go and they would read about it. Now, they would go and look for, like, academic books, right? Not opinionated books.
Okay, so basically, now we have two sources. One's media and one's, you know, academic. You know, you might read books, you might listen to the scholars.
Yeah.
So over here, we can say that the people should have their resource to study about Islam, books.
Okay. No, but
within the guide of teacher, don't you think that?
No, that's fine. But I'm saying, realize in the beginning, there weren't that many scholars, right?
Yeah.
But do you realize the boom in Islam over the world, like throughout the whole world?
Okay.
It's a religion slowly coming to the top, right? Now, those who don't want to see Islam at the top, they're trying their best to defame Islam, to make it look like a very, you know, wild and barbaric religion, mm-hmm. right? So people don't go towards it. We will take a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
I believe that this myth that Muslims are, God forbid, terrorists and all, Islam is all about terrorism.
Yeah.
There used to be a time where this myth used to be in the Western countries.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this disease has been spreading throughout the world. Even see its consequences in the East. Okay. In the Eastern countries.
Yeah.
Different countries, like, we see that, you know, Muslims being oppressed in those countries. And what you see is, you know, there's one open enemy of Islam. They just want to defame Islam. One reason you might say is Islam is stopping them to achieve their satanic goals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, why are people believing these myths? What you can see is the factors, like you mentioned, 9/11 and ISIS. What if a normal non-Muslim, someone sitting at his home and he turns on his TV and in the news channel he sees that, you know, there's a man, he's reciting the Shahada, he's showcasing himself as a Muslim, mm-hmm. and he's beheading innocent guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The first opinion people had about Islam was what the media showed them.
Okay, what I'm saying over here is, this happened, right? So how do we defend this?
There are two ways of doing this. One is how you carry yourself in the West mm-hmm. as a Muslim, right?
One point to be mentioned here, due to these myths that Muslims are so-and-so, they're terrorists, they're bad yeah. people, these things led to the racism.
Okay.
You see any Muslim in any foreign country yeah. when he's praying, when like when anyone gets to know that he's a Muslim,
yeah. they look at you funny.
They try to bother him.
Yeah. No, it's not just bothering. Some people are actually intrigued. They want to know why you're doing it, right? It's not just, you know, people have a hate for Islam. Mm-hmm. That's what the media wants to show, that people hate it. But if you really look at people nowadays, especially nowadays, mm-hmm. with the amount of knowledge that's being spread around, people are intrigued about Islam. They realize, oh, look, he's my friend. He's also a Muslim, but he doesn't do these things, mm-hmm. right? That's where you really see their thinking change mm-hmm. from, oh, look, Islam is a barbaric religion, to it might not be that bad, mm-hmm. right? There might be something that the media is not telling us.
Yeah.
They might be telling us the wrong thing, right? So one way to really change their view on Muslims, it's how you carry yourself in the West, mm-hmm. right? You're abiding by their laws. You ethically are carrying yourself, morally are carrying yourself.
What's happening in today's world is, you know, you're carrying yourself very well. You're representing Islam in a foreign country. But how can you ignore that, you know, there's some so-called Muslims, they're spoiling the image of Islam. Like, for an example, ISIS. So what over here, the solution for this, what I think is, people should stop generalizing.
That's true.
You know, if you see certain terrorists in Islam, you cannot simply say that all Muslims are terrorists.
Yeah.
What about oppression in Palestine?
Yeah.
What about the oppression in China and Gaza?
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. Over here, look, every group, every ethnic group, and every religious group.
Mm-hmm.
You have the common people of that, yeah. say, religion or ethnicity, who are, you know, just doing their everyday thing. Like, they're not really causing a lot of problems. But then you have the extremist group that go and cause issues. And what people do is they generalize the whole religion or ethnicity.
That's what happened.
Based
right?
on those
exactly,
people.
Exactly.
Right? So in a sense, you could say ISIS, they're not really Muslims. They're there to make people think that Muslims are like them.
You know, that's the thing about, that's a bad thing about generalizing, right? If someone does something wrong, you don't say like, oh, he's a human, he did this wrong, humans are bad. You say, nah, he's a Muslim.
And now all Muslims are like this.
All Muslims are bad. One more thing. The sign of a learned man is, when he opposes something, he's supposed to know what he's opposing to. You cannot oppose something which you don't know about.
Exactly.
Like Islam, you're talking bad about Islam. Islam is this, Islam
you gotta
is
first
that.
Know what Islam is completely.
First, gain knowledge about Islam.
And
first
then
get
you
to
go
know what,
and give your...
Exactly. First, get to know what Islam is. Learn about Islam. and check what's true Islam, then you get to understand.
Yeah.
And one more myth. You see in different videos, our favorite slogan, Muslims' slogan, we say Allahu Akbar.
Okay.
You know, this is taken really bad in the Western countries. Do you agree that?
Yeah. They've given a bad image regarding that slogan. Exactly. Without really understanding what that slogan means.
Well, if we elaborate Allahu Akbar, like people usually translate Allahu Akbar as Allah is the greatest, God is the greatest. Well, actually, the meaning of Allahu Akbar, it's a beautiful meaning, though. It means that God is greater than what we can assume him to be. Like, for example, Jaffa, I ask you, what do you use Allahu Akbar in your life?
Mostly, it's in the call to prayer, right? It's the start of prayer. I guess you can also use it in situations where you're really astounded by something that, say, it's natural, something that you know, God made this, mm-hmm. right? In astonishment, you say Allahu Akbar. But what the West has really done is, again, it goes back to that same concept of generalizing. They're leaving it on to the people. They'll have someone say Allahu Akbar, and then on the other side, you have someone beheading someone else.
Exactly. Right? And they're like, that's a myth, right?
And they're like, just put these two together.
That has been created.
That's yeah, they're like, look, you got one side and the other side? You figure it out now. We put them right next to each other for you.
You know, in today's world, it's really easy to misportray something.
Yeah.
With the help of media.
Oh, for sure.
I would suggest that media shouldn't really be your platform, your resource to know about Islam.
But in a sense, and as we can use media
to showcase, to portray the right image of Islam.
Exactly, to showcase Islam and let people know, look, what you're hearing from the media isn't always right.
Like, for example, you can listen to IRIB.
Yeah, you can listen to this station right now. We'll tell you what the guidelines in Islam are. We're going to show you how we use these guidelines.
Right, exactly.
Right? And we'll portray it in a way where you understand it as well.
And getting back to my point, it's a sign of a learned man. He learns something before opposing it.
Okay.
You learn a particular thing, then you decide to oppose it or accept it.
That's true. Because you can't have a claim unless you know the whole story.
So I would suggest all the people have a bad image about Islam. I request you to first study Islam.
Okay.
You'll really get to know the beauty of it.
I agree with that. But then you also need to help them understand what sources are correct to understand Islam properly. You realize people who are against Islam are also making books about quote-unquote Islam.
Yeah.
Right? But then they're going to have stuff like terrorist attacks, killings, stabbings, beheadings, and then be like, look, Islam was like this from the start, right? Now, if someone goes and reads that book, obviously they're going to get that general idea that, yeah. Oh, look, this is a barbaric religion, right? So it's not just reading and understanding, but it's using the right sources to understand that religion, right?
Right.
It doesn't specifically have to be Islam, just any religion, right?
True.
To understand that religion properly, you have to get right the right sources.
Right source leads you to the right result.
Exactly.
You cannot simply believe in what media portrays.
Yeah. And now, thankfully, nowadays, people have understood that. Mm-hmm. They've understood that the government has their own, say, they're using their own propaganda to spread what they want the people to understand.
Exactly.
They know that what the government is saying isn't always right. Right?
Exactly.
They've really woken up from this quote-unquote American dream that they had. Look, we're going to tell you everything and you just have to swallow it.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we had for today. And before ending the show, there's a famous hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam that a man is either your brother in faith or your equal in humanity. So now we as a Muslims, what we expect is, you know, everyone to treat us as an equal. We all are humans. There shouldn't be racism against any religion. So what we have our expectations from our non-Muslim brothers and sisters is, We, as being humans, we need to treat each other equally. We need to have rightful resources to study about Islam. That's all the time we have for today. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The so-called war on terror has failed, but failure, they say, is a better teacher than success. And if the U.S. can learn from this failure and how it was generated, it may be able to avoid more disasters in the future, says Anatole Levin, writer, in an article titled How the So-Called Global War on Terror Failed Afghanistan. Stay tuned for more. In January 2002, at the start of the U.S. intervention in Afghanistan, British historian and former soldier Sir Michael Howard published an essay in Foreign Affairs titled What's in a Name? How to Fight Terrorism. In it, he warned that defining the U.S. response to 9/11 as the so-called War on Terror would shape U.S. policies in profoundly negative ways. As he wrote, to use, or rather to misuse, the term war is not simply a matter of legality or pedantic semantics. It has deeper and more dangerous consequences. To declare that one is at war is immediately to create a war psychosis that may be totally counterproductive for the objective being sought. Like others, Howard pinpointed the risk that declaring war on such a nebulous enemy as terror would make that war unending. That war would only drive populations into support for the terrorists and create a with-us-or-against-us attitude that would make it impossible to win over people from the other side. And that the longer wars continued, the greater these tendencies would become. He argued instead for the use of intelligence actions, diplomatic pressure, and limited force. The wisdom of Howard's words has been amply demonstrated by the disastrous outcomes of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today, Howard's allocutions about the so-called war on terror should also be placed in a wider context of U.S. foreign and security policy in the past and future. The creation of meta-narratives, all-encompassing frameworks of thought and analysis into which a wide range of quite different issues are fitted. These narratives are focused on one supposedly monolithic, universal, and overwhelmingly powerful enemy, which it is necessary to confront everywhere. They are fed by American exceptionalist nationalism with its conviction of America's duty to lead the world to the inevitable triumph of democracy. This enemy is cast not only as a military and ideological adversary, but a force of evil. The United States of America representing not only freedom and democracy, but good itself. This is how most Americans understood the Cold War. And amid the rain of condemnation that it is falling on President Joe Biden over Afghanistan, it is vital to remember that not just the disaster of Iraq, but that of Afghanistan too, had their origins in how the George W. Bush administration turned the pursuit of the small terrorist group actually responsible for 9/11 into a global struggle for freedom and against evil. The so-called war on terror has failed, but failure, they say, is a better teacher than success. And if the U.S. can learn from this failure and how it was generated, it may be able to avoid more disasters in the future. For U.S. strategy towards China is also beginning to be portrayed in Washington as an apocalyptic global struggle between with consequences that may dwarf those of the so-called war on terror. Every significant country in the world has its own variant of a foreign and security establishment, and these establishments operate in accordance with certain informal but strict doctrines. These are deeply rooted in geographical location, in specific nationalisms, and in the histories and cultures of the nations concerned. They are, to a considerable extent, impervious to evidence and argument, and barring defeat in war or revolutionary upheaval at home, they change only very slowly. The doctrine of the current U.S. establishment stands out in certain key respects. The first is the scale of its ambition, the belief that the U.S. must seek primacy across the entire face of the globe. The second is its ideological content, the belief that the U.S. has a mission to spread democracy and freedom in the world. American religious traditions in turn help to cast this mission as a crusade for good against evil. There is, however, one additional and paradoxical feature of U.S. foreign policy doctrine, that is, the profound and justified doubts of the U.S. establishment about how far it is really shared by the U.S. population at large. living in what is in effect a giant island protected by the oceans and with friendly weak states to north and south, U.S. citizens are subject to periodic doubts about whether outside forces are really so dangerous to them and therefore whether the expenditure of U.S. blood and treasure on defeating them is really justified. U.S. meta-narratives are therefore also heavily shaped with an eye to terrifying ordinary Americans.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Cause of Enmity. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. We see some people who deny a lot of truths and rise against them while not being able to find any cause for it other than ignorance and awareness. You know, they become enemy of something or someone or some scenario or some notion without knowing enough about that thing. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first infallible Imam, has said, "People are enemies of things which they do not know or understand." See, one of the reasons why we become enemy of something or some position or some stance or some notion is our lack of information about that thing. Because we don't have comprehensive knowledge at times, we start to oppose an idea, a concept. This wise saying is especially true in religious matters. Take the case of people who are well-versed professionals in other sciences, but oppose and disbelieve when it comes to religious matters. I'm sure you have run into such people in your lifetime where, you know, in their regular, normal, average life, they're doing pretty well. They're well-educated. But when it comes to Islam, when it comes to the belief system of Islam, they all of a sudden have this sort of a negativity, right? They are not ready to embrace sometimes what Islam is saying. If we analyze this, we find that they have not really understood the depth and philosophy of religion. You know, the criteria, their standard of evaluating what Islam is saying is off, is not deep enough, right? This is one of the reasons why sometimes we see people becoming enemy of a concept or a trait or a notion. So, you know, remember, ignorance, as long as it's there, it's bound to derail us from embracing truth. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are talking about one of the causes of enmity. And we said ignorance is something where we don't understand something completely in its entirety and its comprehensive knowledge is missing, is when we become enemy of that concept or of that new idea or something that we have not known in the past and we have not experienced it. When a new idea is presented, the first reaction most people give is a negative one. If you do a survey, try floating a new idea, a new thought, something that is out of the box. One thing you realize is very consistent, especially when it comes to the commoners, the common people out there, is that they, all of a sudden, the first reaction is that they oppose the idea. Why is it happening? You have not even heard the idea in its entirety. You have not even contemplated about this concept or idea, and you're being judgmental all of a sudden.
You're expressing your enmity, your opposition towards that idea. Well, it turns out that it is because of their lack of understanding, their lack of comprehensive knowledge of that concept or idea. Why are people opposed to these new concepts, new ideas, which is something out of the box? This is something for all of us to ponder about, to think about, right? It is because, as Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, people are enemies of things which they do not know, especially in religious matters. So inshallah, let's pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us that knowledge through which we can see the reality of things before we come to conclusion about that particular thing and before we take a position on that and, you know, before we express our opposition and enmity towards that particular thing. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. The Attorney General of New York State, Letitia James, has reportedly issued subpoenas to Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump as part of Ford investigation into former president's business empire. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the British newspaper The Guardian. The piece is titled, New York Attorney General Subpoenas Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump Report. Please stay with us for more. The Attorney General of New York State has subpoenaed Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump as part of its Ford inquiry into Trump's businesses, the New York Times reported on Monday, 3rd of January. The document was filed by lawyers for Trump in response to Letitia James' decision to subpoena the former president himself. Trump alleges that Letitia James' investigation is politically motivated. The New York Times said the subpoena for Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. was served on 1st of December, according to a person with knowledge of the matter. The paper also noted that Eric Trump, another one of Donald Trump's adult children, was questioned in the case in October of 2020. Letitia James's office went to court to enforce a subpoena on the younger Trump brother, and a judge forced him to testify after his lawyers abruptly cancelled a scheduled deposition. Letitia James's civil investigation is focused on tax affairs at the Trump Organization, specifically whether assets were inflated or understated to influence tax valuations. In one such alleged instance, in 2016, The Guardian reported on differing valuations of a golf club outside of New York City. The headline, How Trump's $50 million golf club became $1.4 million when it came time to pay tax. Trump denies wrongdoing. Former president's business and tax affairs are also the subject of a criminal investigation in Manhattan, in progress for more than 3 years and joined by Letitia James last May. Last year, the then Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., gained access to Donald Trump's tax records after a multi-layer fight that twice went to the U.S. Supreme Court. Before he left office at the end of last year, Cyrus Vance convened a new grand jury to hear evidence as he weighed whether to seek more indictments in the investigation, which resulted in tax fraud charges in July against the Trump Organization and its longtime chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg. Weisselberg pleaded not guilty to charges alleging he and the company evaded taxes on lucrative fringe benefits paid to executives. Both investigations are at least partly related to allegations made in news reports and by Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former personal lawyer, that Trump had a history of misrepresenting the value of his assets. Letitia James's office issued subpoenas to local governments for records pertaining to Donald Trump's estate north of Manhattan. Seven Springs, and a tax benefit Trump received for placing land into a conservation trust. Cyrus Vance issued subpoenas seeking many of the same records. Letitia James's office has also been looking in similar issues relating to a Trump office building in New York City, a hotel in Chicago, Illinois, and a golf course near Los Angeles, California. Her office won a series of court rulings forcing Trump's company and a law firm to turn over records. Letitia James and the Trump Organization did not immediately comment on the subpoenas for Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. The Trump Organization is seeking to block lawyers for the Attorney General Letitia James from questioning the former president and his children. The subpoenas for the former president and two of his children were served on 1st of December, according to one of the documents. Eric Trump, another one of Donald Trump's sons, was already questioned by Letitia James's office in October of 2020. The Attorney General's effort to interview Donald Trump under oath became public last month, but it was not previously known that her office, which has been conducting a civil investigation into the former president's business practices for almost 3 years now, was also looking to question Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump. Letitia James's civil inquiry is focused on whether Donald Trump fraudulently inflated the value of his assets to secure bank loans while understating them elsewhere to reduce his tax bills. Her office has subpoenaed a number of documents as part of a scrutiny of many Trump Organization properties, including the Seven Springs State in Westchester County and the Trump International Hotel and Tower in Chicago, Illinois. If her lawyers find evidence of wrongdoing, the office can file a lawsuit. As the inquiry is a civil one, Letitia James cannot file criminal charges. But Ms. James's office is also involved in the separate criminal investigation now being led by the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who was sworn in on Saturday, 1st of January. The previous District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr., who had been supervising the investigation for more than 3 years, left office at the end of the year.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The Renaissance paradise turned into an inferno. May the 9th, 2015. When the Westerners during the Renaissance period in Europe separated religion from science and politics, they intended to build a paradise on earth similar to one promised to mankind by religions. That paradise is now turned into an inferno. This is something even admitted by the Westerners themselves. It is true that the religion that European intellectuals in the Renaissance period opposed was not a true religion but a body of superstitions. It was totally against scientific advances and discoveries. This is why Galileo was sentenced to death for his scientific views, and other scientists were also tortured and even died of torture for their scientific discoveries. It was a distorted version of Christianity, not real Christianity. Therefore, there was nothing wrong with parting with this kind of religion in that period. However, the separation of spirituality and morality from science, politics, individual life, and social relations was not a proper thing to do. The Westerners replaced religion by science and rationality and said that there was no need for religion any longer. This was the condition prevailing in the 19th and 20th century. But for the past 40 or 50 years, they have even been defaming rationality, rejecting all rational principles, and advocating relativism and skepticism with regard to all principles, including moral, rational, and even scientific principles. This is not a proper paradigm to be imitated and followed by other nations. Imitating and following a failed model is a big mistake, and it will lead nowhere and promise no bright prospects.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Saint Mary is a role model for believers. August 7th, 2004. At the opposite end of the scale, Allah the Exalted mentions two women as role models for believers. And Allah sets forth as an example to those who believe the wife of Pharaoh. Behold, she said, O my Lord, build for me in nearness to you a mansion in the garden, and save me from the Pharaoh and his doings. The Holy Quran, Surah 66, verse 11. One was the wife of the Pharaoh, and the other was Hazrat Maryam, and Maryam the daughter of Imran. The Holy Quran, Surah 66, verse 12. As for the first woman, she was not beguiled by the Pharaoh's palace. She was a woman who was raised in a Pharaoh-like manner, and most probably her parents and household members were the descendants of the same Taghuts. She was living with utmost comfort and welfare, but faith in Musa conquered her heart, and as a result, she believed in him. When she began to believe and know the path, she abandoned all the comfort and welfare, and she was no more attracted to that great palace. She said, O my Lord, build for me, in nearness to you, a mansion in the garden. She preferred a house in paradise, and she attached no significance to the material life. As for Hazrat Maryam, and Maryam the daughter of Imran, who guarded her chastity, and we breathed into her body of our spirit. She preserved her chastity. These are human values.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
In the limelight.
The ice sheet lost about 166 billion tons during the 12-month period ending in August. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading Greenland Ice Sheet Shrunk for 25th Year Straight in 2021, a report shows. Stay tuned for the details, please. Is the 25th year in a row in which Greenland's ice sheet lost more mass during the course of the melting season than it gained during the winter. That's according to the latest report from Polar Portal, a website featuring observations from Danish research institutions that monitor the Greenland ice sheet and the sea ice in the Arctic. The report explains that while the early part of the summer was cold and wet, with unusually heavy and late snowfall in June, which delayed the onset of the melting season, July saw a heat wave that led to a considerable loss of ice. The Greenland ice sheet lost about 166 billion tons of ice during the 12-month period that ended in August, which is near the annual average since the mid-1980s, the report notes. From September 1986 to August 2021, it has lost about 5,500 billion tons, contributing 1.5 centimeters to the average global rise in sea levels of about 12 centimeters. The ice sheet ended this season with a net surface mass balance of about 396 billion tons, although that makes the current season the 28th lowest in the 41-year time series, or a somewhat average year. The report highlights how perspective changes in line with climate change, explaining that in late 1990s, the same figure would have been regarded as a year with a very low surface mass balance in the climate picture at that time. The report explains various observations in detail, including unusual weather during the 2021 Arctic summer, extreme melting periods despite average temperatures, and sea ice dropping to its second lowest level last July. Last year was also notable, the report says, because precipitation at Summit Station, which is located at the top of the ice sheet at an altitude of 3,200 meters above sea level, was registered in the form of rain. When the rain was recorded in August, the U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center noted that there is no previous report of rainfall at this location, which reaches 3,260 meters in elevation. The historic event was also highlighted by Michelle McChrystal, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Manitoba, when a team she led published Arctic rainfall research in November. She said, "The fact that we are getting rainfall on the summit of Greenland right now and that we are maybe going to get more rainfall into the future, it kind of staggers me." McChrystal's team wrote that the transition from snow to rain dominated the Arctic in the summer and autumn is projected to occur decades earlier and at a lower level of global warming, potentially under 1.5 degrees Celsius, with profound climatic, ecosystem, and socioeconomic impacts. Their paper came mere months after Niklas Bohrs of Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research said that a research team he led found evidence that the central western part of the Greenland ice sheet has been destabilizing and is now close to a critical transition. "We are at the brink, and every year with CO2 emissions continuing as usual exponentially increases the probability of crossing the tipping point," Bohrs warned. "It might have passed the tipping point, but it's not clear. However, our results suggest there will be sustainability-enhanced melting in the near future, which is worrying."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Snowfall and dropping temperatures have increased the problems of the poor and needy people across Afghanistan. Here, we are visiting some displaced families who face harsh conditions in their camps in Kabul. Bushra Amiria, mother of 10, is displaced from Helmand province. She says she has nothing to feed her children or heat her simple shack.
"I am a widow and have several children. I'm really desperate to feed them and keep them warm. My neighbors used to help us, but now everyone is short of money and food."
Other people in this camp have the same problems. Almost all of them are deprived of their basic needs.
"There is no hope for survival. We are left here with no house, no money, and no bread. We are human beings. Why is no one paying attention to us or help us? What should we do in this cold weather and severe snowfall?"
These displaced families hope that the charities and the government could help them to survive the winter. Hundreds of men and women from two camps have come here to enlist them for receiving some aid. Bushra Amiri is happy as she receives some aid and food donated by the WFP and the Gulzad Group.
"I'm very happy today because I have received some food for my family. My children will have something to eat for next month. We thank charities for their humanitarian aid. However, we need more assistance, including warming clothes and heating."
Afghanistan's financial system has been in a free fall since the Taliban took over, partly due to aid cuts and the freeze of some $10 billion in Afghan assets by the U.S. In addition to dealing with cold weather, most of these families are unable to buy food and medicines. They say it will be very difficult for them to survive this harsh winter if urgent assistance is not provided. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Britain's highest rank for chivalry, awarded by Queen Elizabeth to former Prime Minister Tony Blair, a man described by campaigners as one of the most repugnant political figures in the world, in power from 1997 to 2007.
The backlash to the announcement has been immense and is only growing. Furious Iraq War veterans are now calling for the honor system to be overhauled. and more than 500,000 people have signed a petition calling on the